As I've written here, this is work in progress. I didn't expect this to be recorded, so don't hold me if I make a mistake in a formula. It maybe end up being joint work with Michael McBreen. He and I have been sort of doing a lot of work on this in parallel, so we'll probably end up sort of merging our efforts. So let me say what I want to talk about. So okay, well, let me start off with the standard thing you start off with. G is a reductive group. And I'll write little g for the Lie group of G. And I'm going to write g check for the Langlands dual, which won't come up so much in this talk because I'm mostly only, I think, going to have time in this talk to focus on one side of the mirror symmetry equivalence I'm going to talk about. So G is a Lie algebra. And one thing that gets us is that the dual of G is a Poisson manifold. So this is, if you're a representation theorist, maybe your favorite Poisson manifold in the world. Let me tell you something about it. So it has a characteristic polynomial map down to Lie algebra of the Cartan mod the Weyl group. So what this is saying is this is just the map that takes a matrix to its unordered list of eigenvalues. Maybe I'll write that here. Characteristic polynomial map. Now, the fibers of chi, it turns out, fibers of this map, are the symplectic leaves of the Poisson manifold G star. So we should want to understand what these things look like. So chi inverse of lambda, for lambda a regular semi-simple element, that means that I'm picking a set of eigenvalues that are all distinct. In this case, the fiber of that is just going to be the orbit. I'll write O lambda for the orbit of the sort of regular semi-simple element under the coadjoint action of the Lie group on G. So this is just going to be all matrices with this prescribed set of eigenvalues. At the other extreme, if I take 0 in here, then I'm going to get the nilpotent cone. So this is all the matrices that are nilpotent, all the matrices that have all eigenvalues 0. Now, when we see this thing is very badly singular, so what we do, of course, is we pass through a resolution, which I'm going to write like this. This is the Grothendieck-Springer resolution. Right, and this thing is a simultaneous resolution of the fibers of chi. So in other words, we have a map, which I'll call maybe chi tilde, so this fiber was already smooth, so it's the same thing over here. And now this fiber, when I pass to the resolution, gets replaced with its resolution. Resolved nilpotent cone, which is equal to T star G mod B. Okay. So that's kind of the basic setup. Now what we're going to be interested in, okay, so let me say that coherent sheaves on T star G mod B, coherent sheaves on the Springer resolution, I'm going to need to leave some room here. This thing is a category that's very important in representation theory. So some work of Arkhipov, Bezrukhovnikov, Ginzburg showed that a category of coherent sheaves on Springer resolution is related to a category of representations of the quantum group. And then Bezrukhovnikov, Mirkovich, Rumnian showed that this category is related to representations of the Lie algebra itself. And sort of understanding how representation categories decompose in various ways is like the fundamental goal of representation theory. So all this is to say that this is something we're very interested in. So Bezrukhovnikov conjectured that the mirror dual of this thing should be a regular semi-simple orbit. Only now there should be a Langlands duality, so let me put it here. So this is going to be about the place the Langlands duality appears, except not quite. he conjectured that the mirror to this thing is what I'm going to call a multiplicative regular semi-simple orbit. So I'm going to explain what that means. But before I do, I have to correct this conjecture, because it turns out that, as stated, this isn't entirely correct. What I need to do here is I need a multiplicative version of the Springer resolution on this side here. So the heuristic here is that this is going to be part of a general pattern in representation theory. So I don't know, general pattern in mirror symmetry, homological mirror symmetry, for maybe I'll say for Coulomb branches of 3D theories, mirror symmetry is best stated, or has its sort of most natural formulation, as a duality of multiplicative Coulomb branches. So let me give a couple examples of what I mean by this. Multiplicative, as I'll say in a minute, this is another way of saying maybe like the K-theoretic Coulomb branches. Let me say what I mean by that. So just to make a little table of analogies, so the sort of simplest sort of one of these hyperkähler spaces. So yeah, I should say that the general context of this thing is that in representation theory, we care for a lot of reasons about, you know, certain non-compact hyperkähler spaces. You know, and in physics, we of course obviously care about these particular class of them. The sort of simplest and most natural and easiest to consider are the toric hyperkähler varieties, which the sort of Higgs presentation of these is as a complex symplectic reduction of T star C to the N by a K torus. And now the multiplicative version of these, multiplicative toric hyperkähler varieties or multiplicative hypertoric varieties, are going to be something similar, except instead of starting with T star C to the N, I'm going to start with something I'll call T star C to the N multiplicative and do a quasi-Hamiltonian reduction by a K torus. So this thing here is going to be equal to C2 minus XY equals 1 to the N. And I should make a point to note that this is a Hamiltonian reduction and this thing is a quasi-Hamiltonian reduction. So this is sort of the simplest class of varieties of a more general class of varieties, which are the Nakajima quiver varieties. As above, there's sort of a multiplicative analog given by a quasi-Hamiltonian reduction. So I'll say more words about what quasi-Hamiltonian reduction means in 1 second, although not so much, maybe. Maybe I say that these are all examples of the Braverman-Finkelberg-Nakajima construction of Coulomb branch of 3D supersymmetric theory, 3D n equals 4 theory, this construction, whatever it is, gives you an affine variety, which is not that easy to describe directly, but can be best described in terms of its ring of functions. And its ring of functions is the cohomology of a certain variety that has a sort of convolution structure on it that gives the product here. And the multiplicative analog of this is going to be spec of the K-theory of the same variety. So I think I can be corrected if I'm wrong, but I think that what's over here should have something to do with an analogous 4D theory that's been reduced on a circle, the Coulomb branch of this thing. So why is it that, okay, so why have I sort of made this chart? Okay, first of all, I've made this chart because there have been a lot of misconceptions in the past about, you know, what things precisely are 2D mirror to each other. So I wanted to kind of set the record straight that these things are sort of mirror among themselves. It's not true that these things are mirror to these things, just to set the record straight there. Okay, so why have I written down this table? Let me say sort of, again, sort of speaking very vaguely. I'm sorry for being so vague at the beginning, but I'm just sort of setting up some motivation before I explain what these things actually are. Idea is that these multiplicative spaces, multiplicative space is a loop group analog of additive space. And the second thing I want to say is that multiplicative spaces have, not sure how to say it, maybe I'll say they have Hitchin fibrations. So okay, I'm just going to say a little bit out loud what I mean here, which is for these examples where I talked about how these spaces had natural presentations in terms of complex Hamiltonian reductions, and these had natural presentations in terms of quasi-Hamiltonian reductions. The idea you should keep in mind is that there's a theorem of Alexeyev-Myrinkin that a quasi-Hamiltonian reduction is the same thing as a sort of Hamiltonian reduction by a loop group. So what's happening here is that, you know, I wrote this in this way, but we'll see that actually, in the cases that we're going to consider in this talk, there's a more natural presentation of these spaces in terms of an actual Hamiltonian reduction of some sort of loop version of this space by a loop version of this group. So that's kind of what's happening with these Hamiltonian versus quasi-Hamiltonian reductions. And similarly here, sort of passing from homology to K-theory is, you know, somehow there's a well-known moral that has something to do with adding a loop. And the reason why I've sort of done this passage from the left side to the right side is this second bullet point, that multiplicative spaces are the sorts of things that have Hitchin fibrations. That is, they're hyper-Kähler manifolds, and they admit in one special complex structure the structure of a complex integrable system. And mirror symmetry, homological mirror symmetry, 2D mirror symmetry, whatever, is about dualizing torus fibrations. So if I want to talk about mirror symmetry, I should want to start with something that has a torus vibration. So in the end, you know, not in this talk, but eventually in our lives, you know, we're very interested in these spaces, maybe. Although these are also very interesting. But if we're interested in one of these spaces, if we're interested in the actual Springer resolution instead of the multiplicative version, it behooves us first to sort of understand the statement where there is an actual torus vibration and then try and recover, you know, figure out what manipulations we have to do to get back this thing. This is a general pattern in mirror symmetry. Like if you want to study, you know, a mirror symmetry for toric varieties, you should first understand it for the dense torus inside them. And then you can sort of modify that mirror symmetry statement to understand a statement about toric varieties. Okay, well, that was just a bunch of philosophy that started off my talk. Hopefully people are still interested in paying attention. Does anyone have questions about the things I've said? Okay, so now I'll go to start making some actual sort of precise statements. So what's going to be the multiplicative version of this whole setup that I've described here? The idea should come from the first bullet point that the multiplicative space is somehow about adding a loop. And okay, well, I'm just going to say that adding a loop to a Lie algebra sort of promotes it to a Lie group. So we want group analog of the previous construction. By the way, you might think that the sort of natural thing to do if I said loop analog should be instead of sort of promoting this to a group, I should promote this to a loop Lie algebra. And the relation between those two is exactly the relation between a quasi-Hamiltonian reduction and a Hamiltonian reduction by a loop group. So sort of quasi-Hamiltonian reductions, or sort of Lie groups, are things that are easy to understand that we can get our hands on. And once we've understood that, then we can sort of move to the loop group description, which is more powerful but more complicated. So okay, what are we going to do here? We should want to promote G star by, well, okay, let me say, first of all, we should replace our Lie algebra G by a Lie group G. But then we saw that we weren't interested in the Lie algebra G, we were actually interested in this Poisson manifold, which was the dual of G. So we're going to need some kind of Poisson analog of this thing, something that should be sort of dual to this Lie group and also have a natural Poisson structure. Turns out that such a thing exists, and it's called the dual Poisson Lie group. That is to say, it turns out that although I presented G as being a Lie algebra and G star as being a Poisson manifold, it turns out that actually this guy has a natural Lie bracket and this guy has a natural Poisson structure that makes these into a Poisson Lie bialgebra, and that makes G and G star into dual Poisson Lie groups. So okay, so now I have to tell you what this thing is. And maybe I'll give some motivation for what this thing is in a little bit, but first let me just say that we can take as a sort of momentary definition this fact that this thing actually maps isomorphically onto an open subset of G. So it turns out that inside of G, this thing is equivalent to the space B minus B plus. So these are the lower and upper Borels. So these are this is the space of all lower triangular matrices in G, and this is the space of all upper triangular matrices. So maybe that helps you, maybe it doesn't. Now I'll have to explain what this space actually is. In case you don't have a lot of practice multiplying lower triangular and upper triangular matrices together. Maybe before I say directly what it is, let me tell you a fact about G that isn't strictly necessary for explaining this, but is very helpful for understanding the geometry of the things I'm going to talk about. So a fact, G admits a fibration, a map down to a base B, whose fibers, whose generic fibers are a torus, a C star to the N. And this map is the Gelfand-Setlin map. Let me just skip this for now and come back to it if it becomes important. Sorry, I'm still kind of planning out how this talk is supposed to go. But rather, let me say that, let me just say it this way. Fact, B minus B plus is the set of all elements of G such that the upper left minors of G are all non-zero. So, example, if I'm in SL3, I have ABC, DEF, GHI, then B minus B plus is going to be the set of all of these such that, so first of all, I look at this minor. So the determinant of this is just A. So I have A is not equal to 0. And then I look at this minor. So the determinant of this is AE minus BD. And then I look at this minor, which is already guaranteed to be non-zero because I was in GLN or SLN or something here. So B minus B plus is, in other words, the what you get by taking this group G and deleting the divisor given by the places where any of the eigenvalues of these matrices, these upper left square matrices, become zero. So, okay, well, that's what the Poisson-Lee group is. And now it turns out that once we have this thing here, we can repeat exactly our construction from before. So now, once again, I'm going to have, G is an affine variety, and this is obtained just by deleting a divisor from it.
The divisor in affine variety is not necessarily affine. Anyway, you describe it by equation, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So once again, we have a version of the characteristic polynomial map. So here we took a matrix to its characteristic polynomials, which were landed in Lie algebra H star mod W. Now I'm taking this thing to its characteristic polynomials, but it's an actual invertible matrix, so they'll land in big H mod W. It's the characteristic polynomial map. Now, chi inverse of lambda is, again, going to be a smooth variety. And we can see that from what I've told you here, it's just going to be the intersection of the orbit of a regular semi-simple orbit with this b minus times b plus. So this thing is what I'm calling the multiplicative version of a regular semi-simple orbit. And now, chi inverse of 0 is going to be O lambda intersected, unipotent cone intersected with B minus B plus. So first of all, I should remark, I've used the same symbol for this unipotent cone and the nilpotent cone. That's because they're actually the same by the exponential map. And this divisor that I've deleted misses all the singularities of N. So this is somehow has all the singularities that the nilpotent cone had before. So what I should do is, once again, pass to some kind of simultaneous resolution. This is the sort of group version, Poisson-Lee group version, of the Grothendieck-Springer simultaneous resolution. And so when I do this, this space doesn't change. But now when I pass to this resolution, I get something that I'm going to call the multiplicative Springer resolution. So now I've defined for you what are the two sides in this equivalence. So now I can say what the goal of this talk is. Goal today: understand the symplectic geometry of this multiplicative regular semi-simple orbit. Yeah, right. So we want to get a good understanding on how to understand this Foucaille category so that ultimately we'll be able to compare these things. So how am I going to do this? So it turns out that So now I need to say a few words about, I feel, by the way, like I'm going too fast because no one is interrupting me with questions. So people should, try and slow me down. Are there any questions?
What is H?
The Cartan in G. So yeah.
What is G to the star? Is that easy to describe?
Yes. It's just going to be I think it should just be like the standard version of the Grothendieck-Springer resolution, which means that, you know, it's a pair of an element in here and also a flag that it preserves. Let me say this is sort of a, I haven't been thinking in kind of these terms, but yeah, basically it should be standard thing.
There's a resolution for the group G, like that diagram, right?
For the group G instead of for G star?
Yeah.
Yes, people have, yeah, traditionally, whenever someone says group valued growth in the Springer resolution, they're always talking about the group G rather than G star traditionally. But I'd sort of like to claim that that's a mistake and that like they're using some kind of implicit identifications and things that, like, you know, a lot of times people also write this diagram with G instead of G star. I mean, people normally write, you know, denote the growth in the Springer resolution by this. But like, you know, it really is the dual Lie algebra that's happening here. You know, and you can identify the two with a killing form, but it's important to be aware that sort of this was where you started. And so my claim is that really, like, the correct, like, groupy analog of this diagram really should be this thing that involves the Poisson, the dual Poisson Lie group.
So is this manifold going to be on the left or on the right?
It's sort of on both sides. So the point is that this one is going to be on the right side, and this one is going to be on the left side. The Langlands dual of this one, the Langlands dual version of this one, is going to be on the left side.
So on the right side is the deformed, and on the left side, the resolved.
Yes. Yeah.
So what happens for SL2? What's G tilde star for SL2?
Good. Yeah. So. Yeah, so I should be doing this SL2 example continuously through the talk, I guess. I mean, I'll go into details more. I was planning to spend all my extra time at the end of the talk talking about this, but I should start it right now. So G equals SL2, G star is going to be the set of all A, B, C. This thing here is, the determinant is going to be 1. Maybe I just write that in separately. So such that AD minus BC is equal to 1, and then A is not equal to 0. And then let me also call this thing G star lambda, the sort of lambda symplectic leaf inside of G star. So this G star lambda is going to be equal to this thing, but also with a condition on the trace. So A, B, C, D, such that AD minus BC is equal to 1. A is not equal to 0, and A plus D is equal to lambda. So I can replace that condition here with if I substitute that D is equal to lambda minus A, I get A, B, C, lambda minus A, such that A times lambda minus A minus BC is equal to 1, and A is not equal to 0. So.
But you're okay with lambda minus A being 0?
I'm okay with lambda minus A being 0. Because this sort of B minus B plus, this dual plus on Lie group, is everything where these upper left matrices have non-zero minors. So I should note maybe that two special cases of this are, so the singular version is where lambda equals 2. That's where, because trace 2 is what you get for unipotent matrices. So if lambda equals 2, then this becomes a minus 1 squared, like a, okay. Well, a minus 1 quantity squared is equal to bc. So that's a singular thing. The other special, well, okay, that's like the singular thing, and I guess all the other ones look pretty similar. So I'll come back to this example.
What's G-tilde star on this example?
Let me come back to that. It's going to, because sort of, I mean, I've sort of written this here to mirror this, but it's going to, make more sense if I talk about the loop group analog of this. But before I do that, I guess I can say what G, so G2 star is going to be this singular thing I said. Sort of, I'll just write A, B, C, such that A minus 1 squared equals B, C. This is the singular thing, and then the resolution of this thing is going to be, well, this is just the singularity of the nilpotent cone. Whoops, but now I have a not equal to zero. And now I'm deleting, so here's the nilpotent cone. I resolve it like this. Here's the sort of P1. And now I'm deleting some divisor that sort of lives up here and doesn't touch the thing I've deleted. I'm deleting, yeah, this is like a quadratic, a quadric inside of here, so it, that misses this point. Right, good. More questions? Okay. So before I start talking about loop groups, I should say something about symplectic geometry. Actually, maybe I won't really say much about symplectic geometry. I'll just kind of, oops, this board, this cleft in the board is going to mess me up. I won't say much about symplectic geometry. Let me just give some hints. So by work of Shiel Ganatra, John Pardon, and Vivek Shenda, this is following some earlier work by David Nadler, who in turn was following a conjecture of Maxim Kontsevich, we should be able to understand the symplectic geometry of a Stein or Weinstein manifold X, Stein, by studying its Lagrangian skeleton. So if X is a, so let me say what this thing is. So if X is a Stein or Weinstein manifold, I'm using these words sort of interchangeably by, you know, work of Eliashberg-Chelyabach, they're the same. X is Weinstein, that means that omega is equal to d lambda. The symplectic form is actually exact, which I can use this symplectic form to turn lambda into a vector field. And the Lagrangian skeleton L is equal to the stable set of V. So this is all the points that when you flow V off forever that don't go off to infinity. So just as an example, if X is the cotangent bundle of a manifold M, then the standard this symplectic form dpdq has standard primitive pdq, which has standard vector field p del p, which is just sort of radial going out along the fibers. And so I can see that as I go to infinity, everything goes off to infinity except the zero section. Okay. So that's my 30-second crash course on what a Lagrangian skeleton of a Weinstein manifold is. Any questions about this? Right. So we should want to understand the Lagrangian skeleta of these things. So now let me say some philosophy about this. So these spaces we're studying are actually hyperkähler manifolds. And it turns out, so now X hyperkähler manifold that is, you know, that has at least one complex structure where it's a Stein manifold. In that case, we should want to find a skeleton which is not just Lagrangian, but actually holomorphic Lagrangian. What people call a BAA brain in some complex structure. Because basically, sort of once you've found one of these skeleta, so I told you that sort of it's a theorem or it's an easy lemma that the result of taking this stable set is going to be a Lagrangian submanifold of X. but not a submanifold. It's going to be a singular Lagrangian inside of X. And the singularities can be very bad, and you know, a lot of symplectic geometry is just all about sort of wiggling around these kinds of singularities and trying to get them into a position where they make sense. So, as we all know, complex geometry is way more rigid than real symplectic geometry. So if our Lagrangian skeleton were actually just a union of algebraic varieties that were intersecting each other in some places, then sort of that might be a lot easier for us to understand. We might be able to have a lot more structure on the Foucaille category. So I told you already that these multiplicative spaces are the sorts of things that have Hitchin fibrations. So what we should want to do, sorry, is that a question? What we should want to do is find a Dolbeau complex structure on X. This is in the sense of non-abelian Hodge theory. So what I mean by this is that you know, the Hitchin fibration is something that has a bunch of complex structures. In one particular complex structure, it's the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And in most of the other ones, it's like a moduli space of connections. That first one is the Dolbeau moduli space, and the others are Durham moduli spaces. And the Lagrangian skeleton of the moduli space of Higgs bundles is best understood in that Dolbeau complex structure, where it has a name, which is the global nilpotent cone. And it's studied by a certain, you know, Morse function that's easy to describe on this Hitchin moduli space. So we'd like to find some analog of that here. So for our space we're considering, which is this multiplicative regular semi-simple orbit, we'd like to understand sort of what complex structure this is in now and how to relate it to a complex structure where the skeleton of this thing becomes holomorphic. Maybe before I do that, I should just tell you what the skeleton of one of these things is. So example, this G lambda star. This is equal to, let me take lambda just for simplicity to be equal to minus 1. Okay, I hope minus 1 is the correct thing. I could be off by a sign somewhere. If I take lambda equal to minus 1, these are all the same, so it doesn't matter, then what I'm going to get is going to be, I claim A, B, C, minus 1 minus A, such that A times minus 1 minus A minus BC is equal to 1. A is not equal to 0. And then when I look at this, I see that I have a minus A squared minus A oh, maybe I wanted lambda equals 0, sorry. That would make a lot more sense. A, B, C minus A. Now I have minus A squared plus BC is equal to 1. A not equal to 0. Mm-hmm. So this is like particularly easy to understand. I'm going to study it by the Gelfand-Setlin fibration, which I decided not to mention in my talk. But in this case, it's very simple. I'm just going to map it down to the A plane. So I take A, B, C, and I map it down to A. Except now this isn't an A plane, it's an AC star, because A isn't equal to 0. And I see that this thing has two singular fibers. If A is equal to, let me just do A squared plus BC equals minus 1. OK, so if A is equal to plus or minus I, then I get the equation BC equals 0, which is going to be singular. And the general fiber is going to be a copy of C star. So I have a copy of C star, and it degenerates at two points. This is, you know, a Picard-Lefschetz fibration. And it's easy to kind of read the skeleton of this thing off from the fibration, that what it is I draw on the base a circle. And then in each fiber, so the sort of skeleton of C star is a circle. And then in each fiber, I say the skeleton of this thing is just a circle. And then it, it degenerates. This is, in fact, the vanishing cycle for, you know, either of these paths down to this thing here. So as I follow its degeneration, it sort of traces out something that looks like a little horn like this.
So this is not holomorphic in the corpus statue you're using?
No. This is in the Betty space right now. So I haven't yet found the Dolbeau space. I'm just trying to illustrate what the skeleton will look like. So, like, if I were just a symplectic geometer and I didn't know anything about hyperkähler structures and you handed me this manifold, I would just go to town on it. I would do this kind of procedure and I would sort of do the same thing over here and follow it around, and what I would get is something that looks like the two bananas. So this is the skeleton of this thing. It turns out to be, as we'll find out, hopefully, the quotient of an affine Springer fiber. But yeah, so we need a more systematic way to understand what this skeleton was than just sort of fiddling around with the geometry here. And now, is everyone still okay if I'm writing all the way over here? Yeah. So what we would like to do, so here's the fact. So this is a theorem of Bolch. This thing.
So here, which symplectic form are you using? Are you using the Kähler form as a symplectic form?
Here I'm using the Kähler form as the symplectic form.
Okay.
Of course, this thing has a natural symplectic form because I told you that this thing has a natural Poisson structure and these were its symplectic leaves. But I think that this has a, So that's the symplectic, that's like officially the symplectic form I'm using, but yeah. So Bolch has a theorem that this G star, I want to do one other thing, which is that, before I say what Bolch's theorem is, I'd like to unwrap this thing. So the difficulty, right, so I can't yet tell you what the Dolbeau moduli space is, because it turns out this thing isn't actually hyperkähler. It's only hyperkähler sort of in a formal neighborhood of the skeleton. And what that's going to be related to is, again, the difference between sort of, you know, doing quasi-Hamiltonian reduction of some finite type space and doing a Hamiltonian reduction of some infinite type space. So we're really going to need to pass to some kind of infinite type spaces before we can start doing honest hyperkähler geometry. So what I'm going to do is I have my G star, and I'm going to pass to a cover of it, which I'll call G star simply connected,
what was wrong? What would have been wrong if you just used the symplectic form on this, the complex symplectic form on this manifold, and took some Lagrangians for the real part of the symplectic form? This ultimately what you're going to land on.
Yeah, nothing's wrong, but what I've said is that if I want to study the symplectic geometry of this, the sort of best way to study the symplectic geometry of a manifold is to understand its skeleton. And I would like to find out what the symplectic form is, what the holomorphic symplectic form is where that skeleton becomes holomorphic. In this case, it's very simple.
I'm just trying to understand, essentially, to remind myself, right, why the Kähler form was a correct choice in the mirror symmetry setup. Why couldn't you just say all along, let me take G star with the real part of the complex symplectic form.
Well,
as a symplectic manifold and the way model there.
Let me say that I don't have a good answer to that question offhand, except that I'm sort of trying to motivate in this talk how to get a handle on the various kinds of symplectic forms and complex structures that appear. So I'm sort of pretending, so far I've been pretending I don't know anything about a holomorphic symplectic form. Sort of like, I don't know anything about hyperkähler structure or anything so far, because I've told you this thing isn't even hyperkähler. So I'm trying to sort of figure out how to fit everything into this hyperkähler framework.
To be enough to be as close as possible to Calabi-Yau, where you would use the Kähler form in your symmetry.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Let me do one example. Let me do an example for you at the end of the talk. Let me do an example for you at the end of the talk that hopefully will answer all your questions about this. But let me try and get this out right now. So this thing wasn't simply connected just because B minus B plus, I still have the whole carton H inside there. So what this simply connected thing is going to be is it's going to be U minus times the carton times U plus. So this is going to be unipotent lower triangular and unipotent upper triangular, so only ones on the diagonal. And the map from here to here is just going to be U minus X U plus maps to U minus times U plus times e to the 2 pi I X. Right, so this gives you something that's lower triangular times upper triangular, and also something with, I'm just unwrapping the diagonal piece. So nothing too fancy is happening here. So now, the theorem of Bulch, okay, and I can sort of, this is a Poisson map. All the maps I'm writing down, this map, these are all Poisson maps. So the theorem of Bulch is that, before I say his theorem, let me define a certain moduli space, Durand moduli space. So the Durand moduli space is going to be connections, G connections on the formal disk, meromorphic G connections, which are going to be of the form, I'm just going to write it right here. Pick a regular semi-simple element, eta, inside of my Lie algebra G. Okay. So I'm going to look at meromorphic connections on the formal disk, which are of the form. So I can sort of basically trivialize these. So I write it as d plus dz over z times an element of times a sort of a power series in z of my Lie algebra. And that power series in z is going to be eta over z plus higher order terms. Modulo gauge. So gauge means I'm going to allow all transformations that sort of fix this irregular term here. So when you're doing, when you're considering these moduli spaces of irregular connections, what you should think of is that somehow this eta is part of the data of your underlying curve itself. So somehow, like I start with a curve that is decorated with, at my sort of puncture, I'm decorating it with my irregular type, which is eta, and I'm only allowing gauge transformations that preserve that irregular type. So this gauge group, let me give it a name. Let me call this group N. And let me just say that its Lie algebra is going to be Z. N versus N star. Okay, actually, this is going to get confusing if I try and do this. So let me not do it for right now. Anyway, this is a perfectly good moduli space. Let me say that the Betti moduli space is going to be Stokes data for those things. Again, up to gauge. These things are related by an irregular Riemann-Hilbert correspondence. So this is due to Bulch and then his theorem. Is that this G star simply connected is equal to my Betti moduli space. Okay, now I think I will move boards. I think I can safely erase this one and this one. Let me erase this one. So then there's a further theorem of Bulch and Olivier Bicard. Which is a non-abelian Hodge theorem for irregular type. So what that means is that just like in standard non-abelian Hodge theory, this space is equivalent to a moduli space of this is equivalent to a moduli space of Higgs bundles. This is what this is telling us, that M de Rom is related to moduli space of Higgs bundles on the formal disk of type dz times eta over z squared plus dot 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 modulo gauge. And this is part of a hyperkähler rotation. It's not very legible. So let me give an example now of what the heck I'm talking about.
And eta is literally the same eta, right?
It's, yeah. So just a toy case, maybe I'll write toy case. My toy case is going to be consider this family here. So I should have said this before. So let me say some other sort of motivation for what's happening with trying to find this holomorphic skeleton. Suppose I wanted to find the skeleton of my non-multiplicative, my additive guy here. The skeleton of a regular semi-simple conjugacy class. Let me say, suppose I didn't know how to do that. Well, I could, one other question I might ask is, suppose I passed you a different symplectic leaf of this thing. Suppose instead of this, I passed to the actual Springer resolution. Now this thing is hyperkähler. But you know, as a cotangent bundle, in the complex structure where it's just in the symplectic structure where it's a cotangent bundle, this thing has a natural skeleton of just G mod B, because I've already told you that. But now in its complex structure, in the natural complex structure on this thing, this is actually holomorphic. So in this case, I've managed to find a holomorphic skeleton. And then the remarkable fact is that these are part of a twister family. Twister family for an underlying hyperkähler manifold. Right. So that's sort of a toy case of the relation of, you know, these kinds of things here. And the point is that, you know, what I could do instead is let me do a slightly less toy example. So instead of these things, where sort of this was kind of obvious, suppose I were interested in slow to e slice. So I might be interested in, of course, there's multiplicative versions of those too, but I'm still doing this sort of toy additive case. So I might be interested in taking a Hamiltonian reduction of this Poisson manifold. So I take Hamiltonian reduction of it by some group n at some character psi, and then I study this family of spaces here as well. And so symplectic leaves are the intersections of conjugacy classes in the regular semi-simple case with a slow to e slice, which is just this thing. Maybe I give this name S. And so the point is that just as above, O lambda intersected S and nilpotent cone intersected S resolution fit into a hyperkähler family. And now the skeleton of this thing is manifest. I guess I don't have time to talk about how to get it, but I can say that the skeleton of this N intersect slow to e slice resolved is just a Springer fiber. So this is sort of, you can find this in Chris and Ginsburg, of course, in some sense. So the moral of this talk is going to be that this space here, this, by the way, is the Dolbeau moduli space. And then just for notation, I really should have been maybe working imposing a monodromy lambda requirement every time. So if I impose the monodromy lambda, I can ask for blah, 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 lambda. Yeah, lambda. Lambda.
No, it's not the same.
I think it is. Right. Okay, I take it back. Yeah. Okay, the lambda is now not the same. This is just Dolbo. Yeah. But I do fix. Okay, let me not get into this now. Let me just say the moral of this talk is that this space, this Dolbo moduli space, is an affine version of slow to slice. And the skeleton of this thing is going to be equal, just as in this example, it's going to be equal to an affine Springer fiber. And so sort of when I think about the construction of this thing, this is like Higgs bundles with this prescribed thing happening here, it's exactly analogous to the construction of slow to slice. So I should say that this special thing is, of course, T star G mod B, the special symplectic leaf, Hamiltonian reduction. So the same thing happens here. This space, M Dolbo, is going to be equal to T star of the affine flag variety. Then you do a certain Hamiltonian reduction, exactly matching the slow to slice case. And so a corollary is that the Foucaille category of this thing, lambda times, embeds into a category of equivariant D modules on the affine flag variety. And that's what using Bezrukhovnikov's work on affine flag variety and Hecke category, that's what's going to allow us to study this equivalence. And that's time, so I think that's where I'll end my talk.
Can you talk back a few of this?
Yeah.
So is this skeleton the single fiber? So there is a little fibration for M double.
Yeah.
This skeleton is the single elliptic.
Yes, yeah, so that's what, yeah, so I guess I had here this Hitchin moduli space picture that in the Hitchin moduli space, of course, it's obvious sort of, maybe I should have said, in this case here, it's obvious what the skeleton is because you have like this is a symplectic resolution, which means you have a base that has a contracting C star action. That contracting C star action I can take as my Liouville flow. So the skeleton is guaranteed to be like the thing that sits over the zero singularity, so that's going to be the singular fiber. And this is an affine version of this. So yeah, so one moral I should have said is that like...
You said affine, what do you mean?
I mean that these, these things don't, the table I erased here, that these things don't involve, these things don't have torus vibrations, the finite type, what I mean is that a Springer fiber, topologically, somehow, this thing is a degeneration of it's a singular fiber of a Hitchin system.
Let me just. So, remind me now, here the fibers are tori or C stars?
Yeah, the fibers in the Hitchin perspective are tori.
Even in this unwrapped picture.
Yeah, so, like I said, in this picture, it's sort of, there is a natural SYZ fibration whose fibers are Lagrangian tori.
I was talking about the C, the G star, SC versus G star. The one blackboard to the right.
Yeah.
So here, it is, we are talking about now the cover, right?
Yeah, although it doesn't, I guess.
The bulge space is the core, or the.
Yeah, but okay. Basically, the right. Okay, so I've been imprecise here at a few points. But let me say that when I should have maybe given the example here. When I pass from here to the G star SC, what it does is like now I can still map down here. Only this thing is going to be. Like I'm basically just pulling back along the exponential map here.
Right.
So the picture is that
there's going to be an infinite sequence of
Yeah, and now there's an infinite sequence of these, and so now the skeleton is an infinite sequence of P1s like this.
It looks like a singular star rather than a singular toes.
Yes, and the, so, right, yeah, sorry. So the point of pulling back to here is basically so that I could mimic the arguments of here that I have this natural sort of...
Also, like the space defined by Bolge is...
Yeah, and
yes,
because like I said, this space, there's no non-abelian Hodge theorem for this space because it's not hyperkähler. I mean, like, you know, the like Ugarivafa space isn't honestly hyperkähler. It's hyperkähler only in a formal disk.
But the other one, the cover is totally hyperkähler.
Is honestly hyperkähler, yeah. So that's what this non-abelian Hodge theorem, that's why I passed to the cover, so I could apply that there.
Then that's going to be this affine Springer fiber?
Yeah, so this is, in fact, the affine Springer fiber of, oh yeah, I should have said, it's the affine Springer fiber for eta times z. So regular semi-simple times the uniformizer. So for SL2, the sort of simplest affine Springer fiber that's like not, is this you know, subregular infinite type, whatever.
Could say a few words about the physical meaning of this unwrapping, but I will not. I don't need to go curious, but right. So, in four dimensions, so all of these spaces can be understood as Coulomb branches of some four dimensional gauge theory, Compatifano and Sarko. Okay. Now, in four dimensions, you prefer to use non-abelian gauge theories with no abelian factors, because abelian gauge theories have something called a Landau pole. Have a gauge coupling. They're not the gauge coupling flows in a pleasant way, which leads to this lack of hyperkähler metric on the Coulomb branch. You could study, but the difference at the level of geometry is if you sort of fix or not fix some parameters of your regular connection. If you have any regular singularity at infinity, there is something called the formal monotomy of the regular singularity. If you have to fix it, you will get a four-dimensional gauge theory which has no abelian gauge groups. Mm-hmm. If you let it free to vary, you are trying to make a four-dimensional gauge theory which has abelian gauge groups, and that's potentially problematic. But then it will give you fibers which are toroid, because that's what happens with four-dimensional gauge groups. Now, a third possibility is I can just take the four-dimensional gauge theory, which has no abelian gauge groups, not only abelian favorable symmetries, compactify to three dimensions, and then only afterwards gauge the abelian symmetries. Mm-hmm. Or this more or less saying that in four dimensions you want a gauge coupling to just turn off the gauge coupling, I think. Then I suspect this is what gives you this sort of thing with fibers as C stars, generically. Mm-hmm. Is that some kind of turning off the gauge coupling of the 4D gauge theory so it did not run? Or perhaps even just gauging it in only in 3D, one of the two possibilities. But anyway. Okay.
Sorry. More questions for Ben?
So once you get this demodulus description,
you
get to coherent shifts.
Yeah, well, so in the end, I'm pretty close right now. I mean, in the end, this is going to be an there's a lot of things I don't have time to say. Let me say two things that I do have time to say. One is that I can actually get this equal to something, and then this thing I write here is going to be the right thing. Now this is going to be the right thing to match with coherent sheaves on here. And what this L means is that when I take d-modules with equivariant d-modules on here, there's too much, this has too much coisotropic objects. Whereas I should only really consider the ones with microsupport in the orbit of my skeleton, my affine Springer fiber here. So it's like the difference between considering like W algebra or considering like only the like objects associated to components of the Springer fiber and not to the whole thing. So that's one thing to say. And the other thing is that, I mentioned that.
This model to match with Fukaya or to match with coherent sheaves?
Both. To match with the Fukaya, because the Fukaya category, as defined, only contains Lagrangian objects.
I see.
So the Fukaya category, so this is restricting to just the objects that like are on my Lagrangian skeleton. So that's what the Ganatra-Pardon-Schenda theorem is going to tell me is actually my Fukaya categories. It's things that are only sort of microlocally along my skeleton. So this is going to be the correct category to match with both of these things. And then sort of one brief remark is that, so I mentioned this Gelfand-Setlin vibration, which I didn't really have time to talk about, but like that's like a kind of natural torus vibration. This is like the simplest example here. I can see that in general, the Gelfand-Setlin vibration is going to be like on these multiplicative spaces, it's going to have base a torus, and then that torus is going to be cut out by some number of hyperplanes. I mean, I'm going to have a hyperplane configuration and a torus, a periodic hyperplane configuration, and like the components, the polytopes in that configuration are going to be like Gelfand-Setlin polytopes for like components of my affine Springer fiber of my skeleton. And now, if I asked like what do those components correspond to over here, you know, how can I find objects over here so that my that correspond to the combinatorics of like points in a torus with like on certain sides of these hyperplane configurations. Ben Webster has a way of producing coherent sheaves with exactly those combinatorics via the Bezrukhovnikov-Kalyadin quantization and characteristic P approach. So somehow quantization and characteristic P is like exactly the thing that lets you read off what the kind of mirror to this skeleton is over here. So somehow the mirror to this this Springer fiber exists in this category through quantization and characteristic P. So that's a very mysterious thing. I know Ben Webster, who's not here, unfortunately has lots of conjectures about how this relates to line operators on the 3D theory and so forth.
Should we thank Ben again?
So the Lagrangians don't look at all like things like the base of each vibration.
Sorry?
So these Lagrangians you're considering are as far from things like the base of the Hitchin vibration.
No, I mean,
possible?
They're not the base of the Hitchin vibration. They're like fibers of the Hitchin vibration.
Yes, but would the base of the Hitchin vibration be inside this category at all?
Yeah, I mean, the base of the Hitchin vibration will be like the base of the SYZ vibration. So
that is, but is there a module in there which is the base of the Hitchin vibration?
I think if I understood the question correctly, I think I would need to think a second to understand the question correctly. So
the base of the Hitchin vibration is Lagrangian.
It's not, but the base, you mean like a section of the Hitchin vibration?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, right.
This section, like dirty, this section.
Yes, right. So that's going to be, there's sort of going to be, so that's right. That's going to be
and it would correspond to O on the other side.
Yeah, so that's what people call like a Whitaker object. And this thing has a canonical copy of the flag variety G mod B inside of it. And the sort of base of the Hitchin section I'm thinking of is kind of like a transversal Lagrangian disk to that copy of G mod B. So in other words, it's the thing that like Hom out of that thing measures like how much your Lagrangian runs over that copy of the flag variety.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that canonical object is in there.